Was Mormon pioneer John Pierce Holly involved in the Mountain Meadows Massacre? Find out more in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Andrea from Lemoore, California, and you're watching Gospel Tangents, your best source for Mormon history, science, and theology.
The Mountain Meadows Massacre and John Holly, how did they intersect? Historian Mel Johnson says that Holly was a big critic of the massacre, but was he involved? It's going to be a very interesting conversation to answer that question. There's some really interesting things. Check out our conversation.
Right. We were off to Utah.
Yeah, so let's go back to Utah here. So Lyman White leaves the Texas in, did you say it was 1853 or 1860? I'm
totally Lyman White never leaves Texas.
Excuse me, I didn't mean Lyman White. I meant John Holly.
John Holly's family leaves in 1853.
And heads to Utah.
No, goes to the Indian Territory. The next year, John P. Holly joins his family in the Indian Territory.
In Oklahoma.
In 1855, the LDS mission under Henry W. Miller converts a total of 65 former Whiteites and old Nauvooers that were there. Strangite missionaries are in competition down there with them. What they're looking for is old LDS families and members. And the LDS Mormons from Utah leave four branches of Native Americans in the church behind when they go to Utah. In 1856, following Brigham Young's advice to immigrate to Utah, these converts of the Cherokee Indian Mission, Whites, journey with Jacob Croft in a wagon train across the plains and up over the mountains, and they come down Parleys and they move over to what is Fifth South. And you know how Fifth South comes into Fourth South,
right.
And they go north one block to Third South and turn down Third South, and they end up in the wagon train yards just north of what is now the city county building on State, where Planet Fitness and the other, in that huge parking lot, it was the church wagon yard. And that's where they debouched. Brigham Young and his counselors interview all of what George Albert Smith refers to as the Texas epidemic. They're all rebaptized. They deed their property to the LDS Church. And let's be honest with this. Brigham Young also deeded $200,000 of his own property the same year. This is during the Mormon Reformation.
Right.
They're assigned to go up to Ogden. They're right downtown near where you were. And they bought the old Loren Farr sawmill.
Okay.
And they were going to mill away. And then, for their sins, they were sent to Washington in Washington County to the following spring to open a cotton mission. It was a miserable time. And it was fortunate they left their wives, John and his brother George, left their wives with the wife's sister, married to one of the Keltings in Provo. So it was an all-man mission down there for the first part. And the corn crop failed. And the cotton crop failed, and the potatoes barely survived. And the whole time that they're working there, you have Pine Valley Mountain looming up in the north of Washington. And Isaac Riddle had discovered Pine Valley that summer, and the stories of its beauty, the thick green grass, the incredible pineries that were available excited the heart of every lumbering man down in Washington. they were not enjoying growing cotton. At the end of the season, John and George go back to Provo, pick up their wives, go to Salt Lake City. They are re-endowed, resealed for time and eternity to their spouses. George is a polygamist. He's got three wives. His brother John is not, and he has real trouble with monogamy. They turn around to
go. So he doesn't want another wife, is that why?
He's fighting against it, but he wants to be a good Mormon.
Right.
He wants to inherit all of the blessings that he can inherit. And he's being told, well, the more wives you get, the more blessings you get. So John loves his wife, no problem with monogamy, but blessings, blessings, blessings. That will be a many year struggle for him. On the way back, the Hollies end up riding along for about a week with the Fancher Baker wagon immigrant train. And then they go on their way. John.
So they got on their way before they got to Mount Meadows.
Yeah.
Good thing for them.
Well, they still met up again. John says that he was very opposed to the plans to wipe out the train. George.
So he was aware of these plans?
Early on. He was part of the men that were called out.
So part of the Nauvoo Legion?
Well, it wasn't the Legion, though they were Legion members. Notice the units were not called out. They were called out by priesthood relationship and family relationships. Look at the number of brothers, uncles, nephews, cousins that are among those 50 men. You don't have a pattern of militia organization. You have a pattern of family and relationships. And that makes sense. If you're going to go wipe out 130 people, you want to be with people that you can trust.
Now, by the way, my current interview is with Barbara Jones Brown, and she says the number is lower. So it's probably 95, 96.
Will comes up with 120 names, Will Bagley.
Oh, really?
And I believe there's probably another 15 to 20 that are not accounted for. Springville residents that ran away from Springville, apostates that wanted to go to California and get away from the LDS church that joined the wagon train. Now, understand, though, that Barbara Jones Brown is an excellent historian and a friend of mine. And she is a descendant of one of Holly's brothers.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is. And she has the latest records that a lot of us have not seen. So perhaps, I don't know that I agree right now, because I would like to know who the 15 to 20 apostates from Springville were. This is one of those apocryphal stories that pop up in distant events, and you have trouble tracking them back. I think that number of 90 to 95 is too low, but it shows the need then why we should be doing more history work trying to find out. She is a good historian. John is saying.
Well, let me back up here. Yeah. So, one of the things that Barbara told me, I'd be curious about this because it sounds like John Holly has some foreknowledge here that I'm really interested in. But one of the points that Barbara made was that, you know, we've got the federal troops coming out because
right.
of polygamy and that sort of thing, and they didn't like Brigham. They were going to replace Brigham Young as governor. And that Brigham had said, okay, let's go ahead. It's okay to steal the cattle from the immigrants. We're going to make the trail unsafe because I, as governor, have been making it safe, and this is what happens when you take me out. And so, really, this was a mistake that happened, that that John D. Lee tripped over a herdsman and they got in a gun battle and he killed him. And then another person got away. And now we've got to figure out how to cover up this one murder. So we're going to kill 100 people. is that reasonable?
That can be argued with tangents, okay, with other possibilities. Also, the issue is, what did Brigham Young know, and when did he know?
Right.
And what did he order? We also have George Albert Smith and his tour of the colony down there in the previous month, meeting with Colonel Dane, with Major John D. Lee, with Bishop Haight, with various Indian bands. And what was George up to? My personal opinion, and I can't document it, but George A. Smith was fanatic and had a hatred of Gentiles and apostates that said bad things about the Mormons, and particularly Joseph and Hiram, his cousins. I think George
was cousins with Joseph and Hiram?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ordained at the age of 22 to the council of to the Quorum of 12, a counselor eventually to Brigham Young, and Brigham and George were thick as thieves. They were in each other's pockets. Confederates trusted one another. What one knew, I'm sure the other knew. Anyway, there's the possibility that George thought he had Brigham Young's permission to do this and was actually the catalyst that set this all off with the leadership. More than 20 years ago, and realize, audience, that I am not saying this is so. I am speculating.
Right. And I just do want to point out also, the city of St. George is named after George Smith.
Yes.
Yeah.
George Smith was the great apostle of the South. He led the first pioneer column down to Parowan, December of 1850, January of 1851, very active in it, active in the Santa Clara Indian Mission, New Harmony, and then in the foundation of St. George. Erastus Snow would later take over that executive responsibility. But from 1850 to 1861 or two, until Erastus Snow and Orson Pratt Sr. Led the colony down there. George A. Smith was the apostle making that happen in the South.
And he was kind of over the St. George area, Washington County area,
and
kind of beloved.
County.
Okay.
Understand the apostle.
And he lived down there, correct?
He lived in Parowan for a few months and then returned to Salt Lake. He was never a regular resident in the colonies to the south again.
So was he in the Washington County area in September of 1857?
No,
so he was not there. He was there in August. Oh, okay.
A month before, talking to people.
Okay.
And I've often speculated, was he the catalyst? And I'll explain why. I wrote a letter to the Salt Lake Tribune 25 years ago, maybe, saying, does anybody who understands the personality and priesthood leadership authority of Brigham Young and how he wielded it in the territory of Utah, does anybody believe that the priesthood would wipe out an immigrant wagon train on their own? How would they explain that to Brigham? By the way,
blame it on the Indians.
Well, they did blame it on the Indians.
Yeah.
But you see all of these issues we have. What was George Albert Smith up to? Brigham's domineering leadership authority, where priesthood was pretty cowed by Brigham Young. Brigham meeting with the Indian leaders. And yes, you can steal the cattle. Let's make this trail unsafe for non-Mormons. Let's make the federal government understand that we're sitting between the United States and the gold fields of California, and that they need to treat us with more respect for our needs and for my authority. One argument is that all of this spun out of control. The other argument is that it was planned in Salt Lake City by Brigham Young. I think there were discussions among the Mormons as the wagon train pulled away from Cedar City and headed to Mountain Meadows, that when the two wagon train scouts went out to the watering hole, the oasis, and were murdered by Mormon outriders there, the stakes went up dramatically. And I don't think it could have happened without Colonel Dame saying, yes, let's do it. He was the stake president of Parowan. He was the commander of the Iron County Brigade. He was the civil authority. He was everything. And I don't think Colonel Dame would have done it unless he thought he had the blessing of George A. Smith and Brigham Young. I am not a great Mountain Meadow Massacre historian like Will Bagley or others, but that's what I struggle with right now. I don't understand how John D. Lee got those people to surrender towards the end of the week after being besieged. He said, yeah, come out and I guarantee your protection from the Native Americans. Several Masonic Mormon scholars have suggested that John D. Lee gave Masonic signs and promises that the immigrants would be protected. Whatever, they were lured out, and we have all read the stories of the massacre. The only small thing other than John Holly's story that I've come up with would have been...
Well, because you said that John Holly was involved in the planning?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Let me finish this, then we'll go to John Holly.
Okay.
Was that medical forensics work show that there were a number pistol holes in the skeletons and skulls of men, women, and children. The only two revolvers that I can find in the Iron County militia musters, men who owned revolvers, that were thought to be at the killing fields was the Indian missionary Ira Hatch and John Pierce Holly. Now, Holly says that he did not approve. Holly says he was not there, but his brother George was there. His brother William was there, and at least one, if not both, actively participated. Maybe George or William borrowed John's pistol. I don't know. But also there's another possibility for those pistol shots. Maybe revolvers were removed from the possession of the immigrants and then used against them. But there's indication that John could have been there. John D. Lee said John was there, but the way he said
John Holly was there.
Yeah. But the way John D. Lee said it was not like that. Mel Johnson was there, I saw him. Rick Bennett was there, I saw him. he said, I seem to remember that John Holly was there, much more muted. And as you know, John D. Lee was an irascible character. He held his grudges deeply. And Holly called Lee out over and over and over during the next decade for Lee's participation and partial leadership in the massacre. But you find almost no attacks on Holly by Lee when he's attacking everybody else. Studying everything, I want to give John Holly the benefit of the doubt, but I like that old Scottish canon of law, guilty, not proved, innocent. I think it's not proved. You can't say he's guilty or innocent. It's not proved, meaning there's a real doubt, but we can't pin it on you.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with historian Mel Johnson. We're not done with the Mountain Meadows Massacre yet. Mel makes a pretty startling claim.
And now you got John Holly acting almighty and righteous and calling you out for murder. And of course, that scares everybody to death because everybody supposedly took the covenant up on the killing field that what happens in Mount Meadows Oasis stays in Mount Meadows Oasis. So a secret meeting is held of the priesthood in Washington. And by a narrow vote, Holly is allowed to live.
If you'd like a transcript of this conversation, we'll have it out shortly. I'd also like to thank you for those of you who are subscribing on Patreon.com. Please tell your friends. It's really helpful and will help support future documentaries and podcasts such as this. Also, make sure that you subscribe on our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Also, make sure that you, if you'd like a written copy, go to our Amazon page. You can search for that. I've got a link here, but just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you should be able to find it there. You can also purchase a transcript of this at gospeltangents.com/shop. All of those proceeds will go to me and not to Amazon, so I really encourage you to do that. Make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. I've got a link here, but you can just do a search for Gospel Tangents there. If you'd like to get a transcript, click here. To subscribe here on YouTube, go ahead and click here. And over here, you'll see some of our other videos. Thanks for listening, and we appreciate you listening to Gospel Tangents.